It's good to be back home at Holden. I'm living proof that if you come up here often enough, they'll put you on the faculty. This is my 11th trip up here. And Carol was very kind to me today. I came up on the bus at noon, and he said I would not have to go on the podium at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd have until 8, and I'd be able to take Vespers. Now, I'm grateful for that, since I didn't come prepared to give Vespers. In fact, this is the first time I've ever given Vespers. In fact, I didn't even know what to wear for Vespers. But I remembered that the real cool pastors down in California wear these new turn collars. So I put on one of these. But these surprises that Carol Pohl makes Carolyn Holden so very interesting to me. And it was a surprise sort of too that Jean Swihart gave to me. She said she'd found something really great. It's a book that's called Clues to the Kingdom by Edna Hong. It's already received one plug this evening. I am giving it another. It's unsolicited announcement, sponsored by the Holden Bookstore, which received some of the royalties from Edna. And I am grateful for Edna because she gave me something to think about and to tell you and talk to you about tonight. In her chapter on fugitives without passports, she said that happy Christian is happiness incarnate. I have a feeling her happiness, child's happiness, is connected somehow with the kingdom. To that end, and for my dossier, I translated two of Kristen's happy songs. The songs without words her being hums, and he who has ears to hear, hears. And on the last line of her second poem that she has now translated on hearing her little granddaughter, sing-a-ling-ling, sing-a-ling-ling, the red, red robin in the cherry tree is lyrical for me, is lyrical for me. Now, you probably think that's like some of these Californians. That's a text for the day. But it really is. Edna is pointing out something that is very important. And I'm going to take some excerpts from a lecture on the art of listening, or I called it something else too last year. I change the name each year, but I don't change too many of the words. And some of these excerpts from this and some other thoughts that I have that I'd like to discuss with you tonight under the title of One Who Listens and Calls. Now, it's about hearing and listening, which is something we do so little of, and much of what we do it so badly. The other morning, before an advisory committee that I'm on at the University of Washington, we were going to this meeting, and I said, and I hesitate to, you know, to tell people that I'm a bird watcher because they always figure you must have two heads or something. But I asked them, how many birds did you hear this morning? And you know, they kind of looked at me, you know, and they said, well, like, where's the other head, you know? And I says, they said they didn't heard any. Really, there had been a lot of birds singing, but they hadn't heard them. Now, I could ask the same question today down at 25 Mile Creek. I always get up early, and I took a walk around 25 Mile Creek, and I saw a lot of birds. Now, I could have asked quite a few people there, how many birds did you hear at 25 Mile Creek this morning? Now, a lot of them would have said they didn't hear any. In reality, there were between 15 and 20 species there, and some of them had very beautiful songs, but they didn't hear them because they weren't tuned in. Or they didn't know about them. To really hear someone, you have to know about them, and you have to be tuned in, and you have to be a concerned listener. Now, John Godfrey recognized this. He spent his life as a mediocre lawyer. He really wanted to be a poet. He was quiet, dignified, and he did a lot of listening during his lifetime. Unbeknownst to many, he had amassed a substantial amount of money during his lifetime. And so after retirement, in fact, he was about 80 years old, he contracted the building of an unusual and most beautiful structure. Now, many people wondered about this building. They couldn't figure out what it was going to be. They were very curious about it. Finally, it was completed and inlaid in gold over the entrance to this building were these words, "The man who listens." And in explanation of this, John Godfrey said this very gently. "One of the most terrible aspects of this world today is that nobody listens to anyone else. If you are sick or even dying, nobody listens. If you are bewildered or frightened or lost or bereaved or alone or lonely, nobody really listens. Even the clergy are hurried and harassed. They do their best and work endlessly, but time has taken on a fragmented character. It doesn't seem to have any substance any longer. Nobody has time to listen to anyone, not even those who love you and would die for you. Your parents, your children, your friends, they have no time. That's a very terrible thing, isn't it? Whose fault is it? I don't know. But there doesn't seem to be any time." Now, these words by John Godfrey were put there by Taylor Caldwell in her novel, The Listeners. Now, you don't have to go to a novel to read these kind of words. You can read them in an actual letter. And it's one of the most disturbing that I've read. It's from Creative Brooding by Rains. "Dear folks, thank you for everything, but I'm going to Chicago and try to start some kind of a new life. You asked me why I did those things and why I gave you so much trouble. And the answer is easy for me to give you, but I'm wondering if you will understand. Remember when I was about 6 or 7 and I used to want to come to you and have you just listen to me? I remember all the nice things you gave for me at Christmas and my birthday, and I was really happy with these things about a week. But at the time that you gave me the things, but the rest of the time during the year, I really didn't want presents. I just wanted the time for you to listen to me, like I was somebody who felt things too. Because I remember, even when I was young, I felt things. But you said you were too busy. Mom, you were a wonderful cook, and you had everything so clean, and you were so tired so much of the time from doing all those things that made you so busy. But you know something, Mom? I would have liked crackers and peanut butter just as well if you had only sat down with me a while during the day and said to me, 'Tell me all about it so I can maybe help you understand.' And when Donna came, I couldn't understand why everyone made so much fuss, because I didn't think it was my fault that her hair is curly and her skin so white and she doesn't have to wear glasses with such thick lenses. Her grades were better too, weren't they? If Donna ever has any children, I hope you will tell her just to pay some attention to the one who doesn't smile very much, because that one will really be crying inside. And when she's about to bake 6 dozen cookies, to make sure first that the kids don't have to tell her about a dream or a hope or something, because thoughts are important too, to small kids, even though they don't have so many words to use when they tell about them, about what's inside of them. I think that all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing out their hair worrying about are really looking for somebody that will have time to listen a few minutes and who really and truly will treat them as they were grown-ups who might be useful to them, you know, or polite to them. If you folks had ever said to me, 'Pardon me,' when you interrupted me, I'd have dropped dead. If anyone asks you where I am, tell them I've gone looking for somebody with time, because I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. Love to all, your son." I submit this without comment to you, and because it speaks for itself. I may discuss some of the aspects of it in a later lecture. But as important as this is, and it's very important, there is someone we must listen to first. We must first listen to God. God had a lot of trouble with his people, and so did the prophets. You recall the words, "You have ears, but you do not hear." There are about 1,200 references to ears and hearing in the Bible. We must first listen to God. And where do we hear him? Dr. Rognes says you either hear him everywhere or you hear him nowhere. To hear him You must hear him in Jesus Christ. First, it's a local voice before it becomes a universal one. You hear him in one place before you hear him in every place. God remains a vague mystery and hidden power, and therefore not the great God of creation, until you have him in the person of someone who walked among us. The roar of a cascading stream remains just a roar. The rustle of the wind in the trees remains just a rustle. Nature speaks only her own language unless you have heard God speak to you through Jesus Christ. Happy is the man, the woman, and the child who has tuned his ear to the living word. Then everything begins to speak of God. Knowing his love, you know his majesty. Know his love, and you can see his handiwork in the intricate and complex designs of all creation. But there's a risk in listening to him. For then you risk hearing other voices, the groans, the cries of the unfortunate of the world, people with problems, even as close as your own house or the house next door. Now, there are many stories and many statements that we can listen to that are really undisturbing. They leave us in peace. If you tell me that the trees are green, the sky is blue, and H2O is water, when I hear these, my life remains unchanged. There are other things that we can hear that are most disturbing. An illustration of this is, I'll choose a couple of newlyweds in camp. Phil and Velma Larson, I just met them a few minutes ago. They're in the front seat over here. Now, I don't know much about Phil and Velma, except that they're from Wisconsin, and they've been married 8 days. Now, probably within the last year, I don't know how long, probably some moonlight night, I don't know, Velma probably said, they're like to Chief and I, Velma probably said to Phil, I love you and I want to marry you. Now when that happened, Phil, just like me, you just couldn't say, well, good night and go home and drink a glass of buttermilk and go to bed and go to sleep. That kind of a statement calls for a decision. It can either be a rejection or the one can give the heart to the other. It's obvious what happened. Now, God's call to us is like that. The old, old story of Jesus and his love is like that. We cannot listen to the word that Jesus bar Joseph, the carpenter of Nazareth, was in fact and in truth, in the most exact and literal sense of the word, the God by whom all things were made. He was not merely a man so good as to be like God. He was God. And we cannot face the suffering servant. We cannot face the cross, where Christ died to forgive our sins so that we might obtain sonship. We cannot hear this story and do nothing. We must either escape the tormenting reach of the story by rejecting him or be caught up in the wonderment of it all, in the sheer wonder of his love. He that has ears to hear, let him hear. For the Lord is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. Amen.